This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 28th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 292. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, Justin Trudeau's family friend David Johnston says no to a public inquiry into China's election meddling. Canadians concerned about the Chinese Communist Party's interference in Canada were shocked. One of them is Henry Chan, co-director of Saskatchewan Stands with Hong Kong. He joins me to offer his reaction. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. May 23rd, 2023 in Ottawa. After 2 months on the job, the Special Rapporteur on Foreign Interference, former Governor General David Johnston, delivered his interim report. Johnston's report stated the obvious, that foreign governments, especially China, are trying to influence candidates and voters in Canadian elections, but he recommended against a public inquiry.
When I began this process, I thought I would come to the same conclusion, that I would recommend a public inquiry. Well, it would have been an easy choice. It would not be the correct one. A separate public inquiry will simply not deliver the level of transparency and urgency Canadians expect. The intelligence I have reviewed is and must remain secret.
Johnston's full report is due at the end of October. He is paid at least $1,400 a day until mid-December while serving at the pleasure of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
You're calling on Canadians to build trust, but as Mr. Johnston's report makes clear, you had intelligence and you were briefed on an attempt by Beijing to meddle in our democracy, and you didn't tell the public. Given that, doesn't rebuilding trust have to start with you? And going forward, do you have to create a better disclosure regime that discloses these sorts of attempts to meddle in our democracy, even especially when it benefits your party?
Sorry, Justin, I'm still hung up on the fact that you think I wasn't telling Canadians about foreign interference. I talked about foreign interference from the very beginnings of getting elected. That's why we move forward on a committee of parliamentarians to oversee what our security agencies were doing. That's why in January of 2019, we created the elections protocol that ensured that while our 2019 election was going on, top public servants would be able to monitor through updates daily from our intelligence agencies the state of foreign interference into our elections. Now, we made those announcements in 2019, and we have continually talked about the threat of foreign interference since then. There's an NSICOP report going back to 2017. On foreign interference that I highly recommend people look at. I believe it was 2017. The subject of foreign interference isn't something that suddenly sprang up over the past months. This is something we have been taking seriously as a government for years. And not just here in Canada, but in 2018, when we hosted the G7 in Charlevoix, we created a rapid response mechanism for all G7 countries to respond to foreign interference in our democracies. So maybe you're just waking up to the fact that there's foreign interference, but I've been talking about it for years. And what Mr. Johnston laid out in this report is all the mechanisms we have, how they're working, where we need to improve, particularly in terms of flows of information, and the fact that we're going to have to continue to iterate and keep moving forward on developing even better and better tools as foreign interference continues to get more and more sophisticated.
Reporters asked Johnston about his longtime friendship with the Trudeau family, his membership on the Pierre Trudeau Foundation, and whether he should have accepted this assignment at all.
What I can say with respect to the allegations of an appearance of conflict of interest, I took the trouble of seeking a legal opinion from a retired Supreme Court justice. That's Justice Frank Iacobucci. He was very clear that there's no conflict of interest with respect to the Trudeau obligation. So I have no doubt whatsoever that I had any conflict of interest, and no doubt at all, speaking of myself, about my impartiality or my ability to bring my record such as it is for you to judge as to whether I'm capable of carrying out a impartial and inquiry based on integrity.
The day after the report's release, Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre was in Toronto. He promised he would call a public inquiry if his party wins the next election.
Justin Trudeau has something to hide. It's clear. First, after the election happened, where we knew Beijing interfered, he hired this gentleman named Rosenberg to look into it. Who's Rosenberg? He's a former member of the Trudeau Foundation, which got $140,000 from Beijing. Then there was an outcry because all the intelligence that Trudeau knew about got leaked to the media, showing that Beijing interfered to help him win the election. So he said, okay, I'll hire someone called a special rapporteur. So who does he hire? His ski buddy, his chalet neighbor, his family friend, and of course, member of the Trudeau Foundation. And just to make sure that Mr. Johnson was not in a conflict of interest, they asked yet another person to look into that, who's a member of the Trudeau Foundation. Out of 40 million people in Canada, there's no one outside of the Trudeau Foundation qualified to look into any of this Justin Trudeau foreign interference scandal. This is ridiculous.
This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. As the fallout continues from David Johnson's first report, the special rapporteur's first report, which recommended there be no public inquiry into foreign interference in Canada, I'm joined by Henry Chan, who's co-director of Saskatchewan Stands with Hong Kong. He's joining me from Saskatoon, where he's a notary public. Henry, what was your initial reaction on May 23rd when the report was released?
The first thing that I think everybody was shocked that he failed to call a public inquiry into the matter. And another thing, if you read into the report, a lot of the allegation in which he cites, he said there are uncertainty or not enough intelligence to back it up. And the purpose of the public inquiry is to get those information and to get more information to bring light into those allegations. So I thought that was very much, that was a failing of that report. And also, my reaction was in the beginning, I think everybody would have trusted, and I trusted definitely even till today, that Mr. Johnson is a man of high integrity. But the result of the report essentially means that there are no investigation into what the government knew or did in this matter, and therefore covering the government from any investigation into wrongdoings in which they did. And I think that is, a major conflict of interest in itself, because he was appointed by the government itself. And for that to be made by one man seems, I think, not to be justifiable.
Do you think there's too much of a focus on the classified material that exists and not on the open source? Because there's enough evidence out there in 2019 and 2021. I saw it with my own eyes on the ground covering the Richmond writings, especially, that there were actors who were very sympathetic, who had direct connections to the consulate, that were working to favor candidates for the Liberal Party.
There are actually inquiries where it's possible with classified information, where the government put in documents or whatever, and they're redacted. It's been done in the past, and I'm not sure why he is afraid of doing it. And I saw another interview of Mr. Johnston, I think either on CTV or CBC, and they followed up on him and asked him why it can't be done that way. Then what his response was, then there will be enough context. So I think why I am so frustrated is that, why does he make these decisions without knowing? And And how does he know there won't be enough context to the inquiry? How does he know that there won't be any result? And I think there needs to be a public inquiry, because a lot of those allegations and a lot of the action of the Chinese Communist Party, all covert and clandestine. And through a public inquiry, it allows people, allows the diaspora community, allows the Canadian people to see and bring light into what is happening here and why it has happened the way it is.
Now, David Johnston, of course, he was appointed by Stephen Harper to be the Governor General, and he served during the early years of Justin Trudeau's administration. Yet there still is the question about his longstanding friendship with the Trudeau family, and even perhaps more relevant is his connections to China might be a little too cozy with the Beijing government himself.
Yeah, and in terms of that, I don't think anybody should question Mr. Johnson's integrity, but I think he's not the right person for the job in terms of his relations with the Prime Minister, with the Trudeau Foundation, and his past dealings with China. And I think there are better people who can be put into the position of a commissioner. And I think for him to drag on and to hear public hearings is, I think, continues to not help the government. I don't think this would help the government, nor the process in which we want to bring to light some of the information surrounding foreign interference.
Now, as far as I know, reading the terms of reference, reading the report, there wasn't any power given to David Johnston to put anyone under oath or to demand that they see he see documents. What if people that he did speak to didn't tell him the truth?
That is, yes, that is definitely very true as well. And in terms of the report, it is very limited in scope. So if you have a public inquiry, it could broaden the scope and discover things that we don't know yet. And in terms of the report, one more thing, if I may add, is that he, in the conference, in the press conference he had, and in the report, he focused on administrative fix, on fixing the system of intelligence deliverance to better serve the Canadian government. But if you take a look at that, and if you think about it, if the system is broken, then it's the onus of the government as well. So you can't vindicate the government of any wrongdoings. And I think he was too quick to do that. And it wasn't, the basis wasn't strong enough to vindicate the government on everything. And because there are very strong reports by the leading media who revealed the sources, that the government had known about it, but done nothing. And I don't think the report backs that up.
Did you think that this exercise was a genuine attempt to try to find the truth? Or do you think this exercise was really about trying to contain a scandal?
No, I think it is, in a way, to satisfy and to shut people up. We've done it, and therefore you can't ask us to do anything else, because that is the same approach that they use for the foreign interference agent registry consultation. The consultation from the public minister was supposed to be nationwide. But at the end of the day, what we've found out was that there were only two or three meetings that were held, and mostly in Vancouver and in Toronto. And none of the other provinces, including Saskatchewan, Alberta, or some of the other maritime provinces, I don't think they have been properly consulted, nor has it seems like that in places where the Liberals did not have seats, they were not consulted, and they were very selective in who they consult as well. So we saw the same trend in the foreign agent registry consultation. And if this is another show to just satisfy people and to shut people up, because a lot of people won't know that. We are in the inside and we know how they do the consultation, but people outside, they don't know how they do that. So that is, I think, That shows from the Foreign Agent Registry consultation how they act on these issues. And it's just out there to make a headline and to satisfy people, and therefore people can move on. And I think the government, for them to take a long time to do it, they were waiting for the storm to settle and waiting for it to just for another big news to come up so they don't have to worry about this anymore.
Is Canada stronger, weaker, or the same this week than it was last week? Where do you think it is? And what's your forecast for the future?
I think that always we knew that they were a looming threat, that this was going to happen, because we saw signs of it. We saw that there were reports that politicians and even people in the government are being very cozy with the Chinese consulate or with the Chinese Communist government. But I don't think we've seen that it is that in depth. And I think the Globe report and the Globe and Mail report really paint a picture into how much infiltration that they have done over the years and into the highest office of government even. And one thing I always question is in terms of the reports, if there are to be 11 candidates which ran in the 2019 election that received funding from the Chinese government, who those 11 candidates are. So candidates can be the prime minister, can be cabinet minister, can be opposition leaders, can be opposition shadow cabinet. It could be anyone in the parliament. So my question is, and my question to different people, and I've asked this again and again and again, who is running Canada? Because if we don't have light into this issue, we don't have a public inquiry, and we don't know who those people are who received funding, then I think there is a trust issue into who is running Canada, and are those people who are in the high executive office receiving funding from foreign governments to be foreign agent in Canada? And I think that is a question to be asked.
Coming up June 4th is the annual memorials and protests about the anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre from 1989. Does David Johnston's report and the reaction to his report, does that make this year's memorials and this year's protests just that much more important for people to attend?
I think if you see in the past that people who attend, they usually are the same group of people who are already, I think they think that it is more important about democracy, freedom, and to stand up for those ideals than for their own values and for their own self-interest. And I think it does continue without the transparency and the protection against foreign agent in Canada. It does still pose a threat and it looms. There is, and I said this in committee, there is a white terror above people who just simply won't come up to those protests because they fear that if they do something in Canada where those rights, freedom of protest, freedom of speech, freedom of gathering is protected, that their family in China will be targeted or them themselves cannot ever return back to where their home is, to a place where they once call home. And another thing is the continued lack of any government action on this continues that trend, and people continues to not be able to exercise their rights and freedoms granted to them in the Charter of Rights and Freedom. And it is a constraint on people, overseas Chinese, overseas Hong Kongers, and overseas people come from various parts of China because they have families there, they have ties there. And those, they simply cannot just say, I cut it away and it's gone. And another thing I think is very crucial about the date of the Johnston report is that it is set in May and Parliament ends in June. So if the government is to be able to get through the next month or so. They have 3 months to cool off. So that's another, I think, very symbolic thing about the date of the report, is that it's very close to the end of the parliamentary season. And if they're able to make it through the month, they have 3 months to cool it down and to think of something to satisfy people.
Well, thanks again for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast with reaction to David Johnston's first report. My guest, Henry Chan, co-director of Saskatchewan Stands with Hong Kong, joining me from Saskatoon.
Thank you.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, military confirms NATO official visited Taiwan in March. Commandant of NATO Defense College met with National Defense University staff. Lieutenant General Olivier Ritterman met with his counterparts in Taoyuan between March 27th and 31st, shortly before President Tsai Ing-wen met with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy in the U.S. NATO involvement in the Asia-Pacific has been increasing recently. On May 3rd, it was reported that NATO would open a representative office in Japan, marking the military alliance's first permanent liaison office in Asia. In Kyoto news, 14 Indo-Pacific nations to strengthen supply chain for critical items. Ministers from the United States, Japan, and 12 other Indo-Pacific nations met May 27th in Detroit to bolster supply chains for chips, medicine, and other critical items in the event of an emergency under a U.S.-led economic initiative. The enhanced supply chain resiliency will be the first agreement among 14 member countries of the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, representing 40% of global gross domestic product, and it could help counter China's economic influence in the region. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong's Justice Secretary refuses to say if morning Tiananmen crackdown is illegal, but points to security law. This year, two pro-Beijing organizations will host a hometown market carnival in parts of Victoria Park until June 5th, while some other areas, previously used for a remembrance vigil, will be closed for maintenance. For three decades, Hong Kongers had been holding candlelight vigils at Causeway Bay's Victoria Park to commemorate the Tiananmen victims. However, the assembly was banned in 2020 among COVID-19 restrictions, and there has been no vigil for the past 3 years. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, Oregon Department of Justice considering criminal investigation of Democratic Party for false donation report. Elections officials in the Secretary of State's office closed their investigation of the party's handling of the falsely reported $500,000 contribution from former FTX executive Nishad Singh earlier this month as part of a settlement, and said they did not refer the case to the Department of Justice for possible criminal investigation. On King 5, a piece of wildfire safety gear that works every time is not mandatory in Washington State. Fire barrier curtains will protect firefighters trapped by flames in engines, dozers, and brush trucks, but they aren't commonly used in Washington State. They can withstand temperatures of up to 2,800 degrees, the temperature of the hottest wildfires. Aeronautical engineer Jim Roth of Los Angeles created the fire barrier curtains that have worked every single time they've been deployed since 2009. In Czech news, I just had to save her. Komok's humble hero speaks about fiery gas station rescue. Jenny Liu was working behind the counter on what had been a quiet Saturday evening on the long weekend in Komok's when chaos suddenly erupted outside. The co-owner of the Komok's Esso saw that a car had driven into a gas pump outside, shearing it off and causing an instantaneous fire. Fire officials believe the woman who was driving hit the gas pedal instead of the brakes. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone. The virtual
Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to foster parents across British Columbia who care for young British Columbians in need of a home. May 29th to June 4th is BC Child and Youth in Care Week. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 28th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 28th of May in 1987, 18-year-old West German Matthias Rust took off from Helsinki and landed his rented Cessna near Red Square in Moscow? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. And you can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.